Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't going to be in there. But 51% of your prisoners will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folks got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic.
I got in a huge tax situation in 2008 because my divorce was in 2005 and my... I got in a huge tax situation in 2008 because my divorce was in 2005 and my accountant had gotten in cahoots, and next thing you know, my accountant died and a girl that worked for him called my lawyer and said, "We have a problem." She had found on the floor all my tax forms for 7 years signed and with the checks stapled to them. So I'm thinking, I done signed and I done stapled the checks. Well, they were cashing the checks, keeping the money, and not turning in the tax form. They took the money out of the account that matched the exact, because I wasn't watching it.
So you could just see
600,000,
yeah, you're looking
deducted.
At it. Yeah.
So I'm thinking it's the check. Little did I know, it was some people taking the money out.
For 7 years?
For 7 years.
How much money did that?
I ended up owing $22
million. Wow.
$22 million with the penalties. So now, wow. Listen to me, man. Me and my wife in 2008, I get the call. And the way I found out was, my lawyer called me and said, "Hey, man, we got a problem. You haven't paid taxes in 7 years. Man, what are you talking about? I paid taxes. I've been writing the checks and all this here. Oh, man. He said, "This woman found your taxes in your accountant's office on the floor. Every tax check I had written and every was stapled together for 7 years, quarterly taxes, all of it." So he said, "Man, that's tax evasion. You can go to prison." Mm-hmm. And I said, "What are we going to do?" So he said, hold on, man, let me get some lawyers. So he called up some tax accountants out of Chicago. These boys was the best. And they set me down and they said, man, we got a major problem. He said, I got a friend working at the IRS. Let me take the first year. We took the first year and we sent it in. And he said, man, well, this is an old tax return. He said, man, we got a problem. He got more, but he didn't know it. And so we need a tax payment plan. So the tax payment plan was so astronomical that it was no way I could pay this. So the deal was if you miss one payment, we come and seize all your assets and you go into jail. That was the deal. So the way I found out I was in real bad trouble was my accountants, my former manager, lawyer, got on a conference call to discuss it. But they sent out an email with the conference call number to my assistant. But it wasn't supposed to go to me. She inadvertently gave it to me. I wasn't even supposed to be on the call. So when I logged in, they were already talking, and I just didn't announce myself. And I heard them say, nobody can live under this amount of stress. There's no way he can pay the back taxes, pay his current taxes, and his living expenses. And I heard a guy on the phone say, what are we going to do when he goes to jail? And I hung the phone up. I went upstairs. I said, Marjorie, Dawson, Marjorie, we got a problem. When I explained it to her, Marjorie started crying. She sat down and cried. My wife cried for two straight days. She said, Steve, what you going to do? I said, I'm going to go to work. I took every comedy gig in this country. I signed every contract. I went to work, man. I worked every single Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. I went to every venue, the Verizon, Staples Center, MCI, Phillips. I sold out the Fox. I went everywhere. I stayed on the radio, man. I'm coming, sold out. I never missed a payment. And for 4 years in a row, I was sending $650,000 a month to the government. Plus, I had to pay my current taxes.
New taxes.
I couldn't get behind on nothing. And I was living. So I was credit cards, running them up, paying them off. And finally, man, in 2012, I sold 49% of my radio company to iHeart. I got a check, man. I got me a check. And then, so I paid the government completely off to zero. And that was the first time, man, I could breathe. And then the pay-per-view, I said, let me get out of stand-up because my wife said, Steve, you finna be a major TV star. You're going to have to stop telling the jokes you're telling because you're going to ruin your career. Because she saw the political correctness turning. And so she said, Steve, you can stop if you want to. I said, baby, I can't ever stop telling jokes. It's who I am. She said, well, okay, but you got to watch what you say. And all of my TV shows are sponsor-driven. The radio is sponsorship-driven. I said, man, let me get out of this because I need time to go do more TV. And so I did one last comedy show, but I did it on pay-per-view. And little did I know, for $8, you could watch my last show. I had no idea how many people was going to tune in for that. I made a lot of money. It was the biggest single paycheck I ever made. And next thing you know, I was back.
Okay, this morning we have a very special guest on, Dr. V. Cecil White. We'll be back in a couple minutes with him.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. You ain't going to be in there. But 51% of your prisoners will be black because you don't blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and it's a, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money from the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, that is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about something like about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. And so you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You know you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March for what? Who cares? Marching, they never changed anything.
Oh,
good morning, all, and welcome to another installment of BIY Shacks, which means Build It Yourself Shacks. Formerly, It's My House, as some people still call it, It's My House. Good morning, Chris Collins.
Good morning, Bobon. How are you doing?
Fine.
And I'm great. So thankful that we have our guest here, Mr. Dr. White. And he is running for the 10th district there in Florida in Orange County for congressional district. And he wants to impact the community with social impact. And he has traveled the world. This man has traveled to 131 different countries so that he could figure out the solutions that need to be met because there's such a diversity across this planet. So I'd love to welcome him to the show.
All right, Dr. White, your mic is open, and good morning.
Good morning, sir, and thank you, Chris, and thank you to your host and having me. I'm glad to be here.
Hey, well, first thing, Chris, I'm going to let you control the interview, but I got one question to answer just to start off. I'm trying to catch up to your count. I've only done 13 countries. So far. So, boy, how long did it take you to reach that goal?
It didn't take very long, but it's been part of my entire life. I mean, first it starts off with my parents, right? My mother and father were missionaries. They were missionaries within the African Methodist Episcopal Church. So we lived in places as Panama, Costa Rica, Haiti, Jamaica, then, of course, various sectors of the United States. Then as I became a young adult, I began to travel on my own. One of the things I wanted to see is to explore different cultures, different peoples, and to also catch up with my own background, my own relatives. I have relatives in Jamaica, Haiti, Panama, Brazil, Senegal. So I wanted to catch up with them, learn more about myself, my relatives. Then, of course, as an academic, additional doors were open to me, giving lectures in different parts of the country, different parts of the world, because of my position on various issues, various things. So I was invited. I had a chance to go to Botswana, Namibia, South Africa, Ghana. The world was opening up. So I traveled. Then, on the other hand, I have an itch to travel because the itch allows me to understand people even more. So at least every 8 months or someplace or sometime around there, I'm traveling to another country. And I tell people all the time, traveling is easy. I mean, in fact, it's easier for me in Florida to travel to a place like Honduras or Venezuela or Colombia than it is to fly over to California. You know, so it's very easy, and it's not as expensive as one thinks, and people open the doors, their homes to you because you now are an ambassador from your culture, from your society, and people love to talk to you.
All right. Well, excellent. Matter of fact, I'm going to set that as one of my goals, go somewhere every 8 months or so. Hold on, Chris, before I give the mic over to you. We've been doing this podcast for like 10 consecutive years, and we started off, the original title of the podcast was It's My House. But right before the new year started of 2024, I don't even know what thought came in my head, but I found out through the United Nations and then some other studies dealing with housing that about 24% of the planet and pretty soon 25% of the planet, they live on what many people call shacks, meaning they, and the common denominator is these people, and that's like 1.9 billion people, they live in homes that they built themselves. And they weren't financed by any banks. They just, you know, whatever they can come up with. Some look like shacks by American standards. And then some look pretty good on the inside as well as outside. So now I'm saying all that to put that all out there. That's why we titled our program, because we're evolving. DIY, which means build it yourself, and then Shacks is that represents what I found out in my research and my limited travel that I've done so far. So my question to you then, and Chris, I'll turn it over to you after that to moderate. Doctor, now I'm in Polk County. I'm right next door to you. So you're running for Congress in Orlando, which is Orange County.
Yeah. Right.
And Orange County, see if I got my stats right. Orange County has over 1.4 million people, I believe, living in the county. So it's a densely populated county out of the 67 counties out of Florida. This is my last question until then. I'll let Chris take it over from here. Why Orange County, and why run for Congress?
Well, first of all, to keep with your theme about housing, and I'm going to keep with that theme. Yes, you're right. We're a very highly dense community. However, we have 20,000 people who are homeless in Orange County. This is unacceptable. And of course, if you go to their count, the government's count, or the county government's account, they say much less. But it's not much less. It is 20,000. And what we have is that there are four types of homelessness that we have to deal with. You have what you call rough sleeping. That's people who are in the street. That's who we see all the time. All right, rough sleeping. Then you have another group of homelessness that we call temporary accommodations, homelessness. That is, they're staying in hostels. They're staying in bed and breakfasts. They're staying in women's centers, private and social housing. But still, they don't have a consistent place to live. Then you have another type of housing called the hidden homeless. And they are people, which we all know them, they are friends and relatives. They are basically going from house to house every other night. They call it sofa surfing.
Couch surfing.
Yeah, so we have that. We have that a lot. Then we have another homelessness community that you don't see them. They're going to work every day, but they're living in their cars, or they're living in maybe dilapidated or abandoned apartments. We have that. So those three of those areas are not even counted into the rolls. So I see this. And as you stated, I've gone to over 130 countries. Not long ago, I was in downtown Orlando in an area that we call Paramore. And that's the area that is by the basketball arena, the football arena, so forth, so on. And that is primarily a Black and Afro-Latino community and a poor white community. This is where they hide their homelessness in Orlando and in Orange County. So what was happening is that I saw men, 40, 50, 60 years old, who are sitting in their own excrement, and people who were blind, crawling on the ground, looking for food to eat. I saw women with all types of sores and ailments that shouldn't be there in America, but they're suffering like this. Now, I've seen homelessness in Brazil. Are you talking about the temporary housing that you spoke of, the Santis? I've been to the favelas in Rio de Janeiro, in Bahia, in São Paulo, in Brasilia. I've been there. I've been to the Santis in Kingston. And I've seen the dilapidated homes in Senegal, in Tanzania, in Kenya. But I tell you right now, some of the worst homelessness that I've ever seen is right here in Central Florida, in Orlando, the place that they call Disney World. And for this to be an affluent community, a wealthy society, a city that is the most visited city in the world, to have this type of homelessness taking place is unconscionable. So therefore, one of my platforms is about this because a home is a human rights issue. Everyone should have a home, a place to live. Now, one of the things that I'm so tired about, people are saying, well, it cannot be done. We're always going to be homeless. Well, I'm going to give you some countries that I've been to again. Japan, no homelessness. All right? You cannot show me anyone who has gone to Japan and said they've seen homeless people. It don't exist. Finland is another country. It don't exist. Iceland is another country. It doesn't exist. And even still, some other countries like Chile, you have less than 0.7% of the people homeless. Ireland, a country that we like to say is so poor and so rough, you have 0.003% are homeless. 0.003% are homeless. Are homeless. So it's almost virtually no homelessness in those countries. Now we have a country that has billions of dollars, trillions of dollars, and we have homelessness. We have 2 million homeless people in the United States. And so that's the most important thing that I'm going after right now. Trying to look for places that we can deal and find a solution to this problem. Because right now, the political entity that's in Washington, that's in Tallahassee, the state capitals all over the country, they're only giving lip service to the homeless problem. In fact, about it, $25 billion in this country could tackle the homeless problem. $25 billion. Now, you tell me, Chris. You tell me, both of you tell me, how much money have we sent to Ukraine and to Israel and to Thailand and other countries? How much money do we spend on military armament to the 900 military bases we have throughout the world? We're not talking about 25 billion.
The bill. Yeah, they just passed the bill yesterday?
In the Senate.
I forgot. It's up there. It's quite a bit.
$95 billion was the last I heard going to Israel and
Ukraine.
And
yeah,
you know, that is unacceptable to me. To look at this, you know, just like you said, you've been to all these countries. They have no homeless, and these other ones that you just mentioned, and every community is different. And Florida's warm, so people, you know, they wind up coming from across the country down there, just like they are in California. And these problems are everywhere, but they all have to be customly taken care of. And the one thing about the nonprofits that collect the block grant money that keep them alive and they have your little projects going in your communities, they are only supposed to help 15% of the community to hit the national average of every COC in the country. That's continuum of care. And that right there was the number that I was like, okay, you guys are handling this. So when I gave my presentation to it, the first thing I addressed was 230 transitional housing units in this city. And they said, well, who asked you to build those? I said, y'all did. That's how many people you didn't help in your community last year. So if we build that, we can help them. Now the other 15% can be helped because they're probably friends of them. They're connected in some way. They're out here trying to survive every day. And I said, now build 400 affordable housing units. That city did what I said do, but they did not want to do it with me because I scared them because they thought they were going to lose their paychecks. All right, so that's something that everybody's worried about because these people get paid to tell you no, that they can't help you. And I don't get paid. I'm not worried about getting paid to help someone. That's not what I'm about. But that don't mean people don't need paid. okay? But they don't know how to house people. And when you put 100 people in a shelter room with a mental problem, if you don't think there's going to be a problem, that's the first problem. And it needs to be addressed as an individual, because you can't take and say this group of people is all the same. Not one of them are the same, and they don't have the same story. And these are things that need to be addressed. How do you feel about addressing the when we give something, you know, an opportunity for somebody to have a shelter over their head, how do you feel about the mental capacity of what that person needs to start becoming, who they're going to become? You know what I mean? They're not who they are yet. They're just now going to start figuring it out. How do you feel about the mental parts of what people are having to go through being talked down to with having nothing?
Yeah, you're absolutely right, because, you know, oftentimes when we talk about homeless population, they try to make the argument that they're homeless because of a mental issue. That may be the case for a few and some, but if you're homeless, you will develop a mental issue, all right? Not being able to live in a place, not being able to shower, not being able to call a place your home, that will create mental illness, that will create addiction, that will create crime. But you see, the bureaucrats that we have, we don't think that way. You know, one of the most saddest things that they did in Orlando a few years ago, I don't know if you remember, they had a case whereby politicians would go out and stay out all night and call themselves being homeless, talking about how it felt. And I railed against this. I said, that's not homeless. That's just having a picnic for you, an overnight camp. You'll have no idea what homelessness is for these people and what it does to them, and what it does to their family, and what it does to the community. Again, we have individuals who just look at the superficial elements of it, and they get money to work on these programs, and they do not put the money in the right places. It goes to friends and pet projects, and they say they're doing something. Right now, in Orlando, as in other parts of the country, they're having these trucks. And the trucks are places where people can go in and shower and go to the bathroom. Again, that is nothing more than a Band-Aid. It looks cute. It looks like you're doing something, but you're really doing nothing. All right? You're not doing anything at all. And what you're doing with your housing projects, Chris, and your associates is tremendous. And it's something that all politicians, all right-minded people should align to, because we deserve better as a people. We deserve better as a country. You understand?
Yes, sir.
Hello?
And thank you. Yeah. Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. We have our call-in number is 619-768-2945. We have a very special guest today, Dr. V. Issa White, running for Congress out of Orange County, Florida, which, you know, if you heard of Orlando and Disney World and Epcot Center, that's all there. We do have a caller. Let's take it. Area code 410. Your mic is open.
Hey.
410, your mic is open.
Hello. Peace and blessings.
Peace and blessings to you, brother.
Can you hear me?
How you doing? Yes, we can hear you.
Man, I'm telling you, I'm excited. I'm in Miami, Florida, but I'm on my way to Orlando this week. I'm on my way to Orlando. And what do I have in Orlando? I have my container model up and running right now on John Young and Silver Star Road. That's worth a hand clap, right? What we
this conversation
is what the government is not doing. But we have enough resources. I'm tired of going to the government. I had a food bank, had a free medical center, run all of that, right? But we got to do it ourselves. And what we're setting up right now is utilizing Unity to fund everything. I mean, it is so much freer than waiting on the government, because the government is not going to do anything. We've been waiting for 400 years for the government to do something. They haven't done anything. We came through the Obama era. We couldn't do anything. We came through the Biden administration. They couldn't do anything. They blessed us for health care and a lot of things. I appreciate that. But to stop the homelessness, it got to come from people that really got the heart. And the money got to come from the heart. The government has a zero heart. But I'm taking an immigrant then, right? I'm an immigrant also. But I'm taking an immigrant in, they're getting paid for that. You best believe. You best believe. They're getting paid some way or another. I don't know how. And the black community is still suffering. Veterans still don't have housing. We got to do it ourselves. And that's why we built our models in Orlando.
Well, I'm glad that you're taking that position. I mean, we call that position the self-sufficiency. You know, we see it in the history of the African-American community, Marcus Garvey, Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and a host of others, do for self, and that's important. The government that we have now, you're absolutely right in many respects, is that they're more in line in creating zombies, whereby you're living, but you're not, you're existing, but you're not really living. And so we have to do things ourselves. You talk about immigration. That's a big issue. That's one of the things that we're talking about as well. What you have in the United States oftentimes, you say, well, how did this person from this particular country come over here, and then 5 years they're already a millionaire? How is it they're able to develop this business, and I've been working for 20 years and I can't get even a loan to do anything that I want to do? Well, you have to understand that, first of all, there are several types of different types of immigrants that the United States bring in. One, you know, we have installments, military installments and military activities all over the world. And many of these people actually work for the United States against their own government. So when the conflict is over, the United States gives them and promises them so much money, so much aid, to redevelop in the United States. Oftentimes they get $20,000, $40,000, $50,000 up front. They get free housing. The children are able to get into schools that some of your kids can't get into. And before you know it, they're setting up a mom and pop store in your community. They're not, the mom and pop stores are not in the affluent white communities, but oftentimes they're in poor communities that sell any type of crap because the people buy it. You see. So you have that level. Then, of course, you know, my father's an immigrant, too, from Costa Rica. Deported, went back, got his papers together, and came back to the country. That's a long story there. But nonetheless, we have an element now with the border crisis, which is something that the underclass community need to really deal with, that you realize that the ones coming in from the border are given, what, something like $2,000 debit card, upwards to that extent. Once they cross, they're able to go and get a flight into any city they want. Thirdly, they're also able to get benefits that you and I have paid for. The point in this manner, the poor black in this situation get on the average about less than $900 a month in Social Security. I'm sorry, yes.
I apologize. I so apologize. We know the problem. It's right in our face. It's been like that since the McDuffie riot. They promised us money here in Miami, the 60, you know, and every single city, minus the black city. Same thing in Baltimore. Same thing everywhere. We know the problem. the question is, what is the solution? Our solution is to create real-time real estate, build our own developments, create our own city in the middle of nowhere. I'll be in Orlando tomorrow, doing an open house tomorrow. Friday is my launch. Next Friday is my launch with the containers. We have steel containers. We don't have to use just strictly containers. We can build anything that we want. We have the machinery at our hands here in Orlando. We have everything that we need to create real jobs for our community. We got to push the government. If you're running for office, I have no problem working with you to help you get elected. But I am tired of talking about the problem. We all know the problem. What is our solution? Our solution is we as black men must stand up. And create the funding.
A few years ago, I spoke at the United Nations on this issue of homelessness, and I focused directly on Detroit at that time, rebuilding the cities, which they have a lot of dilapidated homes there. And I urge people, good-minded people, to go to those cities, to buy those homes. They were almost selling them for pennies, and redevelop, recreate. The larger community didn't want to do it. And you're absolutely right. It's going to take the underclass community to do it and to go right back to the fundamentals of doing for self. I will come to your open house tomorrow. I will make it a point to see what you have. You make sure that the host of this show get the address so I can get it and be there.
Okay, we have another caller from 407. Let's open the mic. 407-701, your mic is open.
Grand Rising, great day. Good morning, Dr. V. That's really interesting. My name is Viata. They call me Dr. V on my blog talk show.
My
because
sister.
I do a health and well-being every Friday morning on the Solution blog talk platform. So it's really nice to hear your voice. I live in Orlando, and I have a solution for one solution. It's not the solution for homeless people because I'm in my late 60s. I walk through my neighborhood, and I pick up trash because I hate trash on the looking around, walking. It looks ghetto and so many other reasons. And then I live in Orlando, the city beautiful. But when you drive around the city, it's ugly because there's trash everywhere. So here is one solution for the homeless. Give them some pride. Give them a stick with a pen on the end and give them a job. Give them a job. Pick them up, whatever you want to do, and drop them off throughout the city picking up trash. We need this desperately. This is the city beautiful. We're ruining our image because of all the trash, and it just pisses me off as I walk through and to pick up all this plastic. I'm like, what is wrong with people? So I have this really thing about trash, and I thought as I was walking, my neighborhood is clean of trash. I go out the main road, and I go through the subdivision. There's no trash in my neighborhood, and why don't we give homeless people that job and pay them minimum wage, pay them something? But we do have an opportunity in Orlando to clean up our city. It's filthy. And there are certain neighborhoods, of course, that don't have trash. What's going on there? They make sure the neighborhoods have the middle, upper middle class neighborhoods don't have trash. But the city in general, especially Colonial, is trashy and ugly. So that's my solution. And I hope that you running for Congress will present that. I think every city, I've been to Chicago, same problem, trash everywhere, and homeless people sitting around doing what? Nothing, doing nothing. Give them a job. They need a job, pay them. What they do with the money is their own business because there is a lot of mental illness in the homeless community, unhoused, I should say, And so we don't want to, I don't think you can force homeless people to go into shelters and all that. They have a testimony. I don't know if you've ever heard the testimony of some people who had were homeless. We have Robin, who's been on LA show, this show many times, who was homeless for, I don't know what it was, 10 years? And now she's not homeless, unhoused. So they have a testimony to give. But to solve the problem today, give them a job picking up trash in Orlando, Florida. That's one solution. So what do you think about that, Dr. V?
Well, first of all, I'm glad that you're dealing with female health. On March the 19th, I will be at the UN talking to the World Women's Conference on female health and that type of thing. I'm a historian, but I'm also an epidemiologist. But what you're saying about picking up trash, this is nothing new. As a historian, I can reflect on what has taken place in the past. FDR, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, has something called the AAA programs, the AAA, the WPA, the CCC, and a host of others whereby Americans during the Depression, they weren't doing anything. They were looking for hope. So what he did, he put programs like you're talking about together to make people busy, put them to work, keep them busy, give them an opportunity to redo their communities and redo themselves, and paid them a wage. You're absolutely right. All right. Now, many people consider FDR a socialistic in this perspective, but the hell with the titles. You use something that works. I think that would work. It would give people an opportunity. It will create self-esteem, and it will make them feel as if they're part of the community again. Psychologically, that is a great thing.
Thank you. I'm glad you agree. Let's get to work. I'll help you.
Thank you. Make sure you go to our website, drisaforcongress.com.
Yes. Thank you. Nice to hear you doing something good for our country, especially Orlando. I love Orlando.
You know, it's so interesting that, you know, we had the brother who was traveling on the interstate to come into Orlando. We had the sister who is dealing with women's health, but she's concerned about the community. Our answers comes from everyday people. And everyday people are oftentimes not allowed to voice their thoughts or opinions because it does not fit a narrative. But
when you look at what our government is doing, by the way, they haven't passed this. I don't think they've passed this foreign aid bill yet. They have the House. I believe the House has to approve it before it goes in action. But our government is broken, totally, in my opinion. The federal government needs to be totally wiped out. The lobbyist system has ruined most of the people working in Washington, D.C. They're not listening to people in the country, let alone the world, who are yelling, screaming, stop fighting, stop dropping bombs, cease fire, stop. We're in 2024, and I hope it's as a congressperson that you push for no more wars. The people of planet Earth are sick and tired of the military-industrial complex making money off bombs and weapons. We can be more diplomatic. We can use our voices. It's time for the Congress and the people in Washington to stop thinking military solutions. We, the people of the world, have spoken because of all the horrible pictures from Palestine, Gaza. We are seeing how crazy and insane war is. And so I hope you will go into, when you win your position for Congress, you go in there with no more wars. People are sick of wars, and we have to find a diplomatic solution going forward.
Absolutely. One of the first things we're going to do is to call for a closing of the majority of the bases we have globally. We have 980 bases globally. The next country that has multiple bases is England, 45. The next country after that is Russia, 5. The next country after that is China, 4. We have military bases all over the world. And secondly, along with this, every congressional leader has voted for the extension of military bases. Before the Gaza crisis, the congressional leaders who are voicing outrage, and they have a right to, and they should, but all 7 of them voted for military, increased military installments in Syria, which was illegal. Military bases are illegal because they didn't ask us to be there. They increased military installments in Iraq, 2 military bases. And they also voted to increase the development and to build a military base in Gaza right now. It's
yes,
not an accident
yes.
that it's being cleared out. So we have to do that because we have to be consistent. You know, recently a person of a particular PAC came to me and said, Dr. White, we can support you with all the money you need if you change your position. And my position is on the people. My position is anti-war. My position is self-sustainability of food in our country. My protection of the borders. My position is the development and real opportunity for poor and under classified communities in our country. So he told me, we can give you money. You know what I told him? I told him, I'm not a whore. I'm not a political whore. I'm not doing this for money. All right? I don't have a lot of money, but I'm doing this because it's the right thing to do.
Right.
And people
yeah.
are running for office not because they have the right thing to do. They want political power.
Yeah.
The other day,
yeah.
there's a state representative in this area. I asked her about a particular bill. She voted on a bill that was really against the African-American community and the poor community, and she hadn't even read it. She
wow.
was voting for things. And we have this bipolar type of representation within our government that must be eradicated. It must be stopped.
Yeah, and you know, right here in Orlando, we have one of the number one military contractors, Lockheed Martin, and so it's time for some of those people to lose their jobs, in my opinion, because why are they number one? Because they're feeding wars like Gaza and Iran, Iraq, all of them. So you have a very, I think, unique position in this city, in this area, to let your voice be heard, but Of course, the resistance is there when Lockheed Martin is busy making bombs and drawing up more military contracts. So I applaud you, and I'll go and support you on your financing on your website, because you're the type of person we need going forward to get out of this bomb mentality and to look at the people in the communities as the solution, not our government. This government is null and void, sleep at the death on arrival. So let's just not even think about them. But as you as a congressperson can work, I hope, building, activity in the communities for the solution.
Yes, 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 if it's the will of God. And we're going to get it done. I would be hands-on, open door policy, but most importantly, I would have commissions of the people, not of the affluent, but of the real people, like yourself
yeah.
and the brother who just came on, who have real solutions, who are concerned about not just ourselves, but about our generation, all right, and about what type of America we're going to have in the next 100 or 200 years, but also concerned about America as being a good citizen of the world. Do you realize that most of our political leaders, congressmen, senators, they know nothing, really nothing, about the global South and how the world thinks. They
yeah.
Really think, I mean, I don't know if you heard, a few days ago, President Biden threatened Jamaica. Why? Jamaica do not follow the idea of one sex marriage. You know, you get married, you have to be male or female. So America has sent an ambassador over there who's married to a person of the same sex. And Biden said, listen, we want you to recognize this. And Jamaica says, no, this is not our law. We don't have to recognize it. You know, we're not going to make exemptions. This is our country. So the Biden said, okay, if you do that, that when your diplomats, when the visas of your diplomats expire, we're going to deport them. That's what he said. All right? Trying to push an agenda.
Yeah, LGBTQ.
These things are not right. Here's another issue, going back to the Caribbean. And I'm saying this because we have a number of people from the Caribbean in Polk County, in Orange County, in Osceola, and so forth. Haiti. You have a number of Haitians who are coming across the border for the South. But check this out. While they are letting certain other groups to come in, scot-free, to go where they want to go, you know what's happening to the Haitians? The Haitians are being sent or deported to Guantanamo Bay or to the Bahamas. Right under our noses. Nothing is being said about it. Nothing is being done about it. How about this? If this is not bad enough, we just threatened Ghana, telling Ghana that we want you to open up a military base for us. If you don't, we're going to subtract money from you. The point is that we have to change these policies. And these policies are not just international, but they're domestic. How are they domestic? All right. The African-American community right now has the lowest life expectancy of any community in the country. Why? And this is among the affluent, too, black people. One, in many of the communities where you have African-American people live, it's infested with chemicals in the ground, bad water, and other issues that has increased cancer within that community. No one is saying anything. How about the mortality rate of black women? Black women have been dying at an extremely high rate after giving childbirth or during childbirth, higher than any other group in the country. No one's saying a thing about it, as if it doesn't exist. Let's go back to COVID, a virus that we had a few months ago. Did you know the majority of the people who died were African Americans, percentagely?
Well, yeah, and we can't, I don't think we can take, I'm a black person with multi-background, racial background, so we can't take the position of victim anymore in the black community. It's a matter of education. I've been teaching on my show about the mortality rate in the, I'm a doula, so I work to help women who become pregnant become educated. That's the problem in the black community. You've got a lot of ignorant women who are spreading their legs and not educated about anything in terms of carrying forth a baby for 9 months. So we got to get out of this system mode and educate
Definitely.
Our community about how to take care of yourself when you become pregnant and then how to take care of yourself beyond that. But no more victim. The high mortality rate is because of ignorance. We've been at this country. There's no excuse for ignorance. We got YouTube. We got libraries. We have all sorts. But the stress level in the black community, and I'm talking about not just the poor ones, but the high middle class, we got to have a three-car garage and a McMansion, and you're broke, and you don't have any money to spend on taking care of your body, but you can pay for your mortgage, big car. So the education, that's why L.A.'s show is important about minimalizing. I'm a minimalist. I live in a tiny house. I lived in a tiny house on wheels for 5 years. And I've been to Cuba. I went to Cuba last year. I'm traveling all the time because the money is going toward, number one, taking care of my body, and number two, using it to take care of my grandchildren, traveling. So then we need education in the black community, not victim-mindedness, but education on how to live a peaceful, prosperous, healthy life. And that's what the part of the problem is.
Well, we look forward for you to work with our campaign because, indeed, you are a revolutionary intellect. And we need people like that who's willing to tell the truth and to raise hard questions and to change not only the external problem but the internal problem within ourselves. We thank you. Thank you.
Yes, thank us. Thank us, United Spirit, U.S., United Spirits, United Souls. When we can come together and mentally and thoughtfully and agree what the problem is and then work on the solution, then we say thank us.
That's right. That's right. I like that. Well, thank you. I hope to be able to meet you real soon.
Yeah, same here.
Okay.
Okay, we'll be back in 2 minutes with Dr. V. Easterwhite running for Congress in Orange County, Florida.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't going to be in there. But 51% of your prisoners will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control buildings and industry, and put that pulls in your money and hold that money. And practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you...
All right, now, we've been on this... Now, I played that piece, which is the Claude Anderson five-story building analogy. I've been playing that for at least 9 years, if not 9.5 years. I start off 99% of my podcast with that. Now we have a live person, Dr. V. Easterwhite, online right now. And Lyndon Johnson put it this way. You can support a person. Well, let me do it in reverse. Ballot box voting happens every 4 years, whoever's running for mayor, president of the United States, Congress, Senate, what have you. That's ballot box voting. But what Claude Anderson's talking about there and what Lyndon Johnson talked about, if you support a person early before there's an election, in other words, gain access. So You've got somebody now, just because he's on the line, that's one form of access. But real access, as Dr. Claude Anderson was talking about, if you don't have any money into the game, you don't have any say-so. I didn't say it. Claude Anderson said it. So running for office, even dog catcher, requires money. Their political action committees, PACs, which Dr. White did, he mentioned one earlier, and then there's super PACs. So Dr. White, just a ballpark figure, all right, because in order for Dr. White or anybody from the local dog catcher to the President of the United States they represent people who bankroll them in, or help bankroll them into office. So, Dr. White, just figuratively speaking, just a ballpark figure, on average, what does it take to bankroll people into Congress? Oh, wait a minute. I got to open up this mic. Sorry, Doc. I muted everybody. Sorry. Okay. Sorry. Your mic is open.
Okay. My opponent, the establishment has already given him, in this race, $1.5 million against me. And that is not even looking at the $2 million that he had before. But because of my challenge, they gave him additional $1.5 million, so he has about $3.5 million to play with. I think on a minimum, to be able to get the message out in the way that I am doing it, we're talking about at least $800,000 to be able to meet the community and get the message out and let them see me and to talk to them. And Claude Anderson is absolutely right. I'm glad that you're playing him because, I mean, he's one of the greatest intellectuals of our time. I had a chance to be with him once on the old Tony Brown show back in the day. And he does not only talk about the money politics, and it's not much when you talk about it in reference to our community. For example, if everyone that's in listening range of my voice, they would give $5 or $10 to our campaign, we don't have that money. But what happens with our community? We say we'll support you, we say we'll vote for you, we say we'll pray for you. But when it comes out to the getting a hard currency, that is the big problem. And it's not like we don't have it, because we oftentimes give that money white candidates and candidates who really have no interest in us. But we are finding the money through the ministers. I mean, we have something like 600 or more black churches, and we have thousands of other churches within this community. But those black ministers, they will find the way to get their constituents, their members, to give money to the white establishment because, in reality, they're going to get some type of kickback for themselves. Just tell the truth for what it is. So to win, we have to have at least 800,000, you see. And again, if people would give $2 here, $3 there, we can do it. And it's not hard to do it. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have access, we have PayPal, we have, you know, all types of other devices. But that's it. But also what Claude Anderson says, you know, brother, he says that we also must begin to vote our interest, right? Todd Anderson was one of the first to talk about that. Vote our interest. Vote our narrative. Vote what is good for our community. Everyone else is doing it. And the sad thing right now, the sad thing about it is that the African-American community, the poor white community, the poor Afro-Latino community, they're voting the interests of other people. And they're hoping and praying that when these individuals get into office, they will remember them. And the reality is that they don't remember nobody but themselves. And that is why they are afraid right now of people. They're afraid of people like myself. They're afraid of people like Cornel West. They're afraid of people like Robert Kennedy. They're afraid of new thinkers that's going to highlight the contradictions and the hypocrisy of our society and offer real solutions. But again, at least $800,000 to win this seat.
Okay, people, let me throw this out there. If you don't, and that, once again, the reason why I play Claude Anderson, practically every program we do is, now you got He's right here on the air live with us right now. If you don't support people like Dr. White, this is what could happen. Let's go back, I don't know, 10 years ago or whatever it was. When Trayvon Martin was killed, I believe he was killed in, what, Orange County?
Sanford.
And
Volusia.
So Sanford County, well, whatever county, right, Sanford County. And they held a trial, and George Zimmerman walked. Okay, let me give you my version of what happened, and this is why I play Claude Anderson every morning, and I'm glad Chris got arranged to have Dr. White on this morning. Is number one, the black community on a critical mass basis did not bankroll the prosecutor into office. So if you don't bankroll the DA in the office and the judges around the table around the office, they can't speak for you, and they're not going to speak for you. So if you want somebody, if you go to McDonald's and you want that Big Mac, you got to pay for it. If you want good representation to represent you, because if you don't represent yourself, if you don't pay for your representation, it's not going to be heard. It's as simple as that. So like Dr. White just mentioned, $2 here, $2 there. Now, our part, we can start off, we're on here, we pay for 7 days a week, but we don't use 7 days a week. But anytime you want to come on here to promote anything, just let Chris know, we'll get you on. And weekends, we it's rare that I use any, we got 4 hours of airtime on weekends, 2 hours on Saturday, 2 hours on Sunday. You're welcome to come on here and promote whatever you need to promote. So that's my part.
You're kind of touching on a few things that I wanted to address on what I've been sitting here listening to. And it's something that we've talked about, you know, and it's what the multiplicity after one is. And, you know, talking about the 781, but we were talking about the military bases, 900, over 900, I think it's 980, but I just say over 900. Military bases across the planet, and everyone else had, I mean, the highest one I heard was England with 45. I didn't hear the rest, but that's all right. I don't believe the rest of them have more than that.
No.
My thing is this, is that we've created a lot of veterans, and there's a lot of veterans right there in Orange County and Miami and everywhere around, you know, right there. And can be impacted because they're within distance, very close distance, which all of them can be impacted across the planet because we got people listening from everywhere. And that's the beautiful thing, okay? We've got veterans in every country. And we want them to know we care, right? And now if we looked at how many homeless veterans are in Orange County right now or how many veterans are in Orange County right now, and we just maybe did a call to action on that and asked the veterans to come out and spend a day, 8 hours. It could be over 2 days, 4 hours a day, make an event out of it. Maybe we'll make it 16 hours. But anyway, if we do this and we have the ability with the radio, you know, just like you said, we have 4 hours on Saturday and Sunday, and we do live broadcast from wherever these events are happening at, and we bring unity back to them because they were taught to be a unit to win the war of, hang on a second, I'm sorry, they were taught to be a unit to win the war, right? They've had something that they never had since they got out of the military, and that was having their back. And they were lost as soon as they got out because they lost something they'd never had prior to that. Because there's not a functional family nowhere on this planet. There's always a dysfunction somewhere. And we need to take the dis out of our mouth. And, you know, that'll be another discussion. But the veterans, if we did a call to action and show the support of the veterans right now, just as a key, there's youth we can do. There's homeless we can do. We can do it in so many different genres of whatever's there. and have these four different weekends going on every month up until election time. But just like you said, what $2 would do, what $5 would do, will amaze people, because it does multiply when people give it. But if we had them show up and do something positive to change what's going on, we've talked about the trash on the ground. This can be another topic, but, you know, we can take trash and turn it back into everything that you throw away, all your refuge.
Absolutely.
And make energy with it, create jobs with it, bring it back to the fossil fuels that it was. There is this technology, we have it. Now, Florida has regulatory things on energy. One of the things that I learned, and I don't know if you have the answer to this, but I think that it doesn't matter what size of power you have. If you're not using it, the energy companies can now buy it from the individual. And if that's true, we have a solution that we can actually bring such social impact to every community. It'd be amazing. But I wanted to address the veterans question first, maybe the youth program, you know, youth projects out across, you know, all the different community events and things that they do, get them to come together and do something that will change everything in their life around them, because they're helping people that need it. Now, you're only as strong as your weakest link, but if we bring unity into that community, we can give an equal opportunity, but then people will see it. Now, there's more value in that, but if we can do that, what do you think about maybe using your campaign instead of it being out there broadcast on the television? We get that anyway, because they're going to show up, because you're boots on the ground making a difference, because win or lose, you're winning.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you 100%, and I like that idea. And not only do I like it, I will follow through with it, because veterans are a valuable resource in our community. In Orange County, we have over 1,500 veterans who are homeless throughout the state of Florida, as well up close to, you know, 18,000, 20,000, maybe even more. They are valuable. They risked their lives. They took a lot of hits from this, psychologically as physically. And no veteran should be homeless. It's a shame that they are. So if this would help them, and give them new life in our community and give us new life, I will work with that to work with them, because they're valuable. You know, after the Vietnam War, because of the homelessness of many of the veterans and how they were treated, did you know that veterans was listed as the most dangerous group of Americans in the country? Did you know that? They were only listed as being dangerous is because the country realized they were being mistreated. You see? So therefore, and like Bob Marley says, a hungry man is what? A hungry man is an angry man. So therefore, to put our veterans in a position of influence, power, a livelihood, a better state of thinking, we have to do something, and Chris, I'll work with you on that. You hear that from me on the radio. My word is fine. Yes.
Dr. V, this is Viata again. I totally agree with what Chris is saying. I have a question for you. I just made a donation. I'm just wondering, where is District 10 in Orlando?
District 10 is approximately 90% of Orange County. Extends from the Disney World area, it's just on the crisp of going into Kissimmee. It's 90% of the county.
Okay, from Disney south to down I-4 corridor to Kissimmee, or almost
yes,
to Kissimmee?
Almost to Kissimmee. Uh-huh. We also do Bithlow, which is east. There's small areas there. And we want to talk about Bithlow. That's a community that we have to help as well. We have a number of poor whites in that community struggling. Many of them are small farmers, and they are
almost an invisible group in itself. So we're going to be going out there as well to work with them, because small farming is very important to our community. I also want to make note that that the average age of a person dying on the street or being homeless is 45 years old. 45. That's young.
Yeah, right? That's because of stress.
It's stress, that's right.
Well, one of the things we have to educate people on, you said a hungry man is an angry man. We can turn that around and say a hungry man has opportunities to learn new skills being without food. And because I am connected to a breatharian, this guy is in Uganda right now. He doesn't eat anything, drink anything. And so part of the mentality that someone is hungry because they don't have the skills to tap into the nourishment that comes from the sky, the sun, the moon, the earth, and all that. And we can educate people about breath work, meditation. If you're meditating instead of medicating, you don't need a lot of food. But then that's the part. I think your campaign can be one of, number one, education. That's what's lacking in this country, knowledge and education. We're so caught up in the government solution that we have lost track of the divine solution. So I'm ready to work with you as much as I can. I don't have a car right now, but I use my son's car every now and then. So I'm ready to work with you if you want to educate people about getting away from the master plan of the government versus the divine plan of our Creator.
I will work with you. I want you to take my email. And it is ISSA, I-S-S-A, 7, 4, F-O-R, Congress at Yahoo. I-S-S-A, 7, 4, Congress at Yahoo.com.
The word for?
The word.
F-O-R. Number 7, F-O-U-R, Congress at Yahoo?
No. F-O-R.
Oh, F-O-R. Okay. I got it. Seven for Congress at Yahoo, did you say?
At Yahoo. Yes, ma'am.
Okay, great.
I want to say something about Trayvon Martin since it was brought up. I don't know if you remember that everyone got really upset when they heard that there was a group that was going to talk about economically boycotting Stanford. Do you remember that?
And no, I don't, but go ahead.
You remember? Well,
no,
anyway, it caused a lot of uproar over there. And I tell you where it came from. It came from me. Because we said that going back to Claude Anderson, in order to fight back, sometimes you have to use economic means. And at this time, they brought in something called Dream Defenders, which is a group out of the Justice Department. And Dream Defenders are individuals who go into the community when they think there's going to be some problems, and they work with the ministers and keep telling the ministers to practice a certain narrative. They control the narrative. They control the argument. And then you started getting all this stuff out that, it's going to be rioting and so forth, which really means that when black folks get together, it's violent, which is not true. Then, at the same time, they brought in Al Sharpton. Remember Al Sharpton? You know him, don't you?
Yes.
And what happened was that Al Sharpton, we were at the Rosen. Al and I go back some years. And we was actually arguing. And I said, they need to boycott, all right, because nothing's going to get done. And he said, we can't do this. He started preaching a narrative, too. And he started saying that, we can't boycott because black people will starve in Florida. I said, black people have never starved in Florida. That's the last thing, But the last thing, but the element was that other people, when it comes down to freedom and justice and rights, they try to dictate the agenda. And if you allow other people to dictate your agenda, no matter what it is, you become a slave to that mentality. And you'll never be able to figure out a solution to your own problem. The only reason why the few people here are developing a solution in this small pocket that we're talking to and we're talking with is because you have liberated your mind and you have thrown off the shackles of mental slavery. And you're beginning to say, listen, we can do it ourselves. We have intellect, we have strength, we have money, we have power. And most of all, we are children of the divine creator that gives you all of this influence, all of this power to do the right thing and to find solutions to the problems. That's all. So I'm glad that I'm talking to you and Chris and all the others. And, you know, I just thank you for all the support that you're giving me. And I thank you for allowing me to be on this beautiful airway to speak some truth.
There's an interesting documentary about George Zimmerman and what another side of the story of what happened in Sanford back when George Zimmerman showed up. And what I thought was really interesting is that somehow a funeral home in, I don't know if it was Miami, got a hold of his body, the young man who was shot. They got a hold of his body, and they kept his body for a period of time before even his parents had a chance to examine the body. It's just fascinating. You should go to YouTube and watch this documentary on George Zimmerman because it brought in Al Sharpton, all the politics behind that whole thing just revealed how crooked the whole thing was and how set up it was and how it wasn't what we thought it was. It's just like the other guy who in Minneapolis, we're learning a whole lot about him, what happened to him. So we got to be wise and discerning about especially when Al Sharpton shows up. It's like, uh-oh, what's going on with him? You know, we got to be sure. He's not honest. He's got an agenda, so let's just be real. And that's why education is key right now for the whole country. Educate, not more knowledge, more truth. That's what Vivek Ramaswamy had a truth campaign. I'm like, oh, truth. Somebody talking about truth. So that's what we got to do.
Yes.
Okay, we have another caller here at area code 423. Your mic is open.
Yes, Chattanooga, Tennessee, my home base. I'm Christopher Blake. I'm working with Dr. White, and I just wanted to give a shout out to the effort that Dr. White is giving to the homelessness poverty situation that is in Orange County. He has worked diligently hard. We've actually been working together for 5 or 6 years to eradicate the homelessness for the veterans, to give them a place to go. But we're opening it up to helping everybody. And I really wanted to just give a couple shout outs to Johnny Alexander, who has really been a tremendous patriot. He's a Vietnam veteran, lost both of his legs, but he has been fighting and going forward and building a model of what we can duplicate in all 67 counties for housing veterans in a self-sustainable community with all the additional activities. One more thing I wanted to throw out there. There's an upcoming grand opening today at 4 p.m. in Plant City. A good friend of mine, Ernesto Samuel, who is an actual genius, is a biomedical engineer and a scientist, he and his physician wife are opening up a free health clinic, fully staffed by his wife and other volunteers as a free clinic. Now, that's something we don't have in Orange County, is it? I don't know of a free clinic in Orange County that is not funded by the government or by the state or by the city, but this is a privately funded free health clinic, and I think that's something we need to look at. Maybe if we can go down there to Plant City and celebrate the grand opening with Ernesto, who's done this all out of his pocket, It would be a great thing that we could duplicate here in Orange County. Speaking of which, we have 20 different areas that we want to help us really put the focus on helping and getting the word out. And I think we're going to have different events and different things happening in all 20 sections of Orange of District 10 and Orlando and Orange County. Oh, by the way, Dr. White?
Yes. Yes.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, I hear you.
Yeah,
we can hear you.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry. Dr. White, tell the people what we're getting ready to do down in the Paramore District. It's a brand new launch that we're doing there at the Bethel Missionary Baptist Church for the people down there.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for the reminder. On March the 2nd, we have aligned with a group called the Zakat Foundation out of Chicago and the Missionary Baptist Church that's in Paramore. We are giving away 400 boxes of food. It's going to be monthly. Not just for the campaign, but perpetually.
Mm-hmm.
The boxes will have enough food to sustain a family of four for 2 weeks, at least.
Wow.
And so we're doing this. And the purpose of this is that, again, we have several people who are living below the poverty line. And Paramore, the average salary per household in that district is $14,000 a year. $14,000 a year. People barely are surviving, barely breathing. And these people are very important to me. So I said, I got in touch with this group. They said, okay, Dr. White, I worked with the church. The church is being led by a wonderful minister by the name of Raleigh Morey, an activist. And he said, Dr. White, you can use our venue, and we will also help to supply volunteers for you. So if anyone who wants to be part of this giveaway, it's going to be every month, you contact the Bethel Missionary Baptist Church on Anderson, 654 West Anderson Street. You call them and you register. I'm sorry I don't have the number with me, but it is the Missionary Baptist Church, Bethel Missionary Baptist Church on West Anderson in Orlando, the Paramore District. If it's the will of God, we're going to duplicate this not only through other areas in Orange County, but throughout the state of Florida. Zakat, they have stations like this in Chicago, as well as in different parts of Houston, Texas. The money is all, nothing is coming from the government. Like the sister stated, and like the brother stated, it's coming from us. We put our nickels and dimes together to take care of our own.
Put the money where the mouth is.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We will continue to do this.
Absolutely. And also we have an event coming up on Saturday, this coming Saturday, over at the Mark Street Palestine Alive. It's actually the building, the property is owned by the Quakers, but they are going to host us so that we can actually do more of a, not a political campaign, but more of a cultural experience.
Yes.
Of how the Palestinians live, what they eat, how they dress, what they, you know, what they wear. And it's going to be just a cultural experience to wrap our arms around the Palestinians who are going through such trauma right now as the Gaza Strip is being bombed and people are being killed and children are being orphaned. We're going to celebrate with the Palestinians and welcome them in our community and keep it intact. You know, it's peace through strength.
Yeah, it's a good thing that this is taking place, because the Quakers, for some of you who do not know them, they're also called the Society of Friends. They were the first group in the United States to get rid of slavery. They stated in their meeting in 1721 in Philadelphia that if anyone wants to be a Quaker, they cannot be involved in slavery. The first one. and they became the conscience of the American community. And so it's fitting for them to do this. I will be there. I will be there shaking hands and taking questions or concerns that you may have. So please show up. And again, the Palestinians are they're under a tremendous hardship, and we as people of African descent, we as people of European descent, we all know what hardship is. So therefore, like Martin Luther King stated, if one is oppressed, we're all oppressed. So let's go out there and show them a little bit of love and solidarity.
You know, that's such a beautiful thing to be, you know, bringing into this conversation, is because one of the things that, you know, took me a lot of years to actually realize it myself, but every continent on this planet, palm, is pink because you're the human race. And we're an avatar in the game, basically, of life, and it's ever-changing. But the palm of our hand never has. And peace on earth is in the palm of our hand. And we don't want any more wars, but we've got to have one more, because we're going to win this war without a weapon of mass destruction. We win it with a weapon of reconstruction. And it's peace on earth is in the palm of your hand. Show that to people and not the back of your hand. Don't talk about what has happened. Let's talk about what's going to happen. And getting this clear, that we are human beings, but we're not being human, but we can be, because you have a choice. And we just need to enlighten people. We're not going to turn on their light overnight. We're not going to make them bright. But we can turn the dimmer switch on. And
exactly.
Now,
I want to tell you what happened to us, Chris. We believe in this peace that you speak of. On the 13th of January, which is the day they celebrated Martin Luther King Day in Orlando, our campaign, we had about 75 people who congregated to walk in a silent parade for Martin Luther King, in a Martin Luther King parade. Our slogan was, Martin Luther King stated, war is an evil. Do you realize, do you know, that the city of Orlando and the JCs who were sponsoring that march kicked us out of the march because we had that message? The message that war is an evil. And that message they didn't want. They wanted to talk about King in a euphoric manner, about 1963, I Have a Dream. But they didn't want a message of King that reflected contemporary issues. So therefore, what they did to our people, they had police around us. They harassed our people. We were a vegetable soup of people. We were Arabs, Persians, Latinos, blacks, whites, old people, children in strollers even. But they did this, and they had armed police, many of them with on bicycles, and they treated us as if we are terrorists. It's going to be a response. Let me know. Let me tell you. And now the national media is beginning to pick up on it. I was sending you all a press release, but that's what happened here. And that means is that they did it because they're so afraid of an alternative voice. That's why I said earlier, they want us to be zombies, walking dead, so that we can't think. So, well, I want to thank you. This has been great.
Awesome. Well, you know, you've been amazing. I've loved everything that you've been sharing. I do want to open up a line because I have a guest. It's 323, and I want to welcome him. This is Mr. Brian Franklin. And he's an amazing man, just like you, and just like every other person that's listening. You're all amazing. Don't think you're not. You just need to find that light and where your shine is, right? You can guide others. But if Brian, are you there?
Yes, as you know, Chris, first of all, thank you for the invitation. I so prefer to be referred to as BAM, because as you know, when you say I am BAM, people don't forget that. There's a lot of Brians out there that are doing work. I'm the only BAM that's doing the work that I'm doing. Thank you so much, Chris.
You're welcome. This is a man. All right, tell him what you do. Tell them what BAM is, and tell them how they all can be part of BAM and how it can be duplicated right there in Orlando by having people like you. It's already there. We know because everybody in the country is moving to Florida when they retire. So, all right, my friend.
Thank you so much. Let me be brief, you all. One of the things, first of all, Dr. V, I so appreciate your work. I've been to your website since Chris invited me, and I appreciate alternative thought. I appreciate people that are going outside the box, so thank you for that. I went to your website. I hit the contact. I put my info in there. I'm in Los Angeles, the homeless capital of the United States of America. And right after I'm off this call and blog talk, I'll be heading down to Skid Row. I'm on Skid Row every Thursday, and what I do, BAM is an acronym for BAM Advertising Movement. There are only two ways to generate cash flow from the internet. It's selling something or advertising something. BAM has been able to sustain a nonprofit give back model that Amazon has not. That website is bamgives.com. Again, bamgives.com. I'm going to say it one more time, bamgives.com. I'm going to close with this details, and I'm going to make a request. The details is this. We've identified, after decades of research, the bottom line causes to homelessness, and now the politically correct term, houselessness. Number one, mental health, including giving up for whatever reason, substance abuse, wanting to get off the grid, don't want to work a regular job, been involved in the military and are suffering from PTSD. So there's all kinds of mental health factors is number one. Number two is cash flow. Number three, affordable housing. That's what Chris does from an affordable housing perspective. Number four is the most unique that most people do not think about, and that is nonprofit individualism. We have over a million nonprofits in America, most of them working independently. If we work collectively, we can solve problems. So finally, here's what I want everyone to do. Two items. One, please visit bamgives.com. Look at the navigation bar. There's all kinds of solutions for those that are dealing with houselessness. And our model is national. It is not just Southern California. And then the last thing I want you to do is to get into our database so that you can stay abreast of what it is that we do. I want you to text the keyword BAM to this phone number. I'm going to say it three times and I'm done. Again, text the keyword BAM. So write this down if you can. And that number is 323-451-5050. Text the keyword BAM to area code 323-451-5050. Last time, please text the keyword BAM to area code 323-451-5050. That will give you three links so you can engage with what it is that we do, including the house list. We put them in business, no charge, so that they can sell an ad using their mobile phones, and it's a way and it's sustainable to get them off the streets. I'm Brian Franklin, better known as BAM, and I approve that message, and I'm done speaking. Thank you.
Thank you, Brian. Or BAM. Thank you, BAM.
BAM.
And, yes, you know, I'm proud to be, you know, part of what he's doing, but it's about what we're going to do. Okay, it's not anything about what we've done together so far. It's about what all of us are going to do. Now, back here to Mr. White or Dr. White, and thank you, sir, for being here. And definitely, you know, I knew that he was going to reach into your website and connect with you. And I thank you so much for being here. Thank you, LA, for having the show today. Now, I would like to give an address toward your thoughts on kids that are hungry. We haven't talked about food, and we have a solution for food. So we have energy, housing, food, and unity, giving people a purpose. Not necessarily saying, hey, you got to come over here and do this one thing, but find the one thing that you find joy in more than anything else in life, and you'll never work a day doing it in your life, but you'll anticipate going to sleep to wake up to do it. And that's what, you know, if we can teach our kids that they are the solution to every adult's problem, and we can feed them every day and engage with them for a few hours, do you think we could get that campaign going? And it maybe even be the play on, I love what LA and then I've come up with the 781, because if we're building a greenhouse or an aquaponics, you know, just an aquaponics or whatever it's happening, or a house, that it's actually making an impact in someone's life that maybe these kids will meet and maybe they won't. But once the problem's fixed in Orlando, we know that the houses can continue to be built and sent somewhere else, or the greenhouses or whatever, so they don't have to stop doing it, because they can, wherever they might go in the country, they can say, I built that, and be proud of it, and know that this whole movement and everything that is built, they built, you know, even though they wouldn't put their hands on that one, it was done because of what they're doing. And if we could get that movement started, what would be your thoughts to that?
I think that would be tremendous. You're right. The sustainability of food is a big issue. In Orange County, again, we have a case, sadly, almost 40% of the children who go to school in Orange County don't know if they're going to have dinner that night. And most of them get their nourishment from the school system. Sustainability is all important. One of the things that I always promote is small farming and urban farming, which is a skill that is being lost. Teach our children how to farm again. Teach them how to raise animal livestock, and let them know that there are opportunities in that. I'm a small farmer myself. I have 15 acres. And one of the things that I do is try to get young people involved in that. And again, if we cannot find a way to make food affordable, get rid of the what I call the food deserts that we have in the city, then we're going to have major, major problems. It's not an accident that the lifespan of our young people has decreased in the last 20 years because of food. It's not an accident that, you know, almost 80% of the American people are overweight, especially children. I mean, now we have kids 7 or 8 years old walking around with diabetes. That's something that was unheard of 30 years ago. So what you're saying, Christopher, is absolutely right, and we work with you on that.
perfect. And now the next thing is I want to talk about the elderly, because that once they're, you know, kind of, they're kind of being thrown away here in America, it doesn't happen in other countries, and you know that. And I want to touch on that, because that's the reason that you've been where you have been and seen what you have seen, so that we can hear and have a visual, and we can talk about it, because it's right here in front of us, and we're the worst ones. And I want all their knowledge and what they went through before the internet and before all this technology, because our children need to really realize that we haven't had it very long, and it could be gone. And if it's gone, how do you survive without the technology that makes them get up and thrive? But if we work with our elderly and show them that they matter, because the one study that I've done myself is our elderly live longer if they take care of their grandchildren. And the thing about the elderly is they don't have to be their blood, because how many generations are under them? They're just looking at that child and what it can be and not what it is learning to be, because we have children teaching children that don't know how to teach children. You know what I mean?
Yeah. There are two places that I travel to where people live very long. One, you're going to be surprised. One is Cuba, and the other is Senegal. One of my first trips to Cuba, I had a chance to meet and talk to the late Fidel Castro at length. I'm probably one of the few people who actually knew the man. And one of the things he did throughout the island of Cuba, he established what you call communities of elders, whereby people who are 60, 70, 80 years old, they put them in areas whereby they are advisors, whatever their skill base, they can advise. And they were able to even teach younger people some things about their profession they were in for 30, 40 years or more. And we saw that these people were happy, they were active, and they were engaged. And in reality, they had less physical problems and mental problems than many of our people in the United States, because they were involved, they were engaged, they were respected, and they were valued. Now, go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, I was going to add to that. I went to Cuba last year, and guess there's no fast food restaurants there. That's part of the problem in America. We got obesity because people are eating all this crap. So I just had to add that. And most of the people in Cuba were not obese. So thank
Absolutely.
You for bringing that in. Yes.
In fact, about it, Cuba has one of the best health care programs in the world.
Yes,
I mean,
they do.
Their physicians are sent all over the world.
I was going to bring up the you know, we talk about the food deserts in the poor neighborhood because they don't get enough vegetables. They get all this cheap stuff from Dollar Tree and Dollar General and fast food.
Absolutely.
But there is no fresh vegetables there. So what about a community garden in those areas?
Well, again, we can do that. In fact, they have technology now whereby it's very inexpensive. For $20, you can create a garden-type tower in your own apartment that can grow tomatoes and cucumbers and other things. They have all types of technology now. But we have to make them available. Then again, going back to my original story in Senegal, you know, I met people there who were 100, 108, 110 years of age. And they're not in wheelchairs, sitting around waiting to die. They were active. And again, they were brought into various villages whereby they were allowed to engage with the young people. And again, speak of their influence and speak of their profession. And they were well respected. And like the sister stated again, there wasn't a lot of fast foods there either. They ate rich, cultivated foods. They ate when they were hungry. These are things that we have to get back to if we're going to change the food element within our country. I mean, in a strange way, we're the healthiest, unhealthiest people in the world, Americans. So bringing forth community gardens, bringing forth people who can teach, turn your yard. If you have a house, turn your yard into a back, into a garden. Turn your front yard into a garden, even. You know?
And Doctor, we have I'll email you about this, but I have plenty of room in my yard to grow food, but I need help starting my garden. So I'm going to email you about hiring, finding someone who can help me start my garden. I've grown a few things, but they just don't do well, especially in summer in Florida. Forget about growing food as far as my experience. But I need help starting my garden.
Yes, please do. We'll make sure we have someone over there to help you. Because when you grow something, if your hands are in that dirt and you're playing with that dirt and you pick something from what you have grown, oh, my God, it tastes so wonderful. You feel so alive. You're connected. Actually, you're connected to God.
And I was
going
to add to that, you know, we have a passive solar greenhouse technology, and it grows fish, vegetables, and mushrooms year-round. We can teach our kids to build it. You can build them on the weekend in your yards. And the patents are free for educational and personal use. And this is something that we can talk about later, because I wanted to hand the microphone back to L.A. and let him have the closing.
I would like for you to send that to us, and we can begin to talk about it and show what you have in reference to the technology you have. That's tremendous.
Oh, definitely. DreamHabitat.org, and I will send it. But, yeah, we'll share
thank
it out
you.
To everybody. Everybody can look. DreamHabitat.org.
Thank you.
But L.A., is the show going to be
well, what's today, Wednesday? Well, we have tomorrow. We got tomorrow open and Friday open. So if the doctor, your schedule wants to come back, he's welcome to come back either one or both days.
Today's Thursday.
We'll write it up.
Thursday.
Oh, today's Thursday?
Yeah, Thursday.
Oh, sorry. Well, Doc, if you're available tomorrow, we have tomorrow open if you'd like to come back, or any day next week. It's you know, so let me or Chris, let Chris know, and we'll send the link out to everybody. And matter of fact, Doctor, I'm going to let you have the last word for today.
Thank you. Thank you. Please support my candidacy. Support brothers and sisters who have the vision that I focused on today. And keep the spirit alive that we're one community, regardless of ethnicity, regardless of religion, regardless to gender. We're one community. And we're either going to live together as one, or we're going to die together as fools. So let us do the right thing. And again, thank you. Stay true to yourself. Stay true to your power. And victory is ours. No doubt about it. Thank you again. And I look forward to speaking to everyone again and listening. God bless you.